Very well, and welcome to the Fed Report Technical Market Call for April 25th, 2019. Let's get right into it because we have an 11:30 appointment. First of all, the stock market, we've made a new closing high on the S&P. We've made it on the QQQ, but it's worth noting that small cap and transports and stuff are not confirming. And so what we're going to do is we're going to talk a little about two things here. First of all, divergences and targets. And second of all, we'll talk about non-confirmations just for a minute. First of all, regarding divergences, it is a it's more of a condition indicator if you're seeing divergence between, say, small caps and transportations and other things of that nature. One of the things that, you know, you have to realize here is these sorts of divergences can go on for a while. And by a while, we mean up to 2 or 3 years. And the problem with that is you have to be careful about turning bearish too quickly. One of the reasons we have our long-term trend system is to avoid that difficulty. The longer these sorts of divergences last, the worse the ultimate correction can be. So that is one of the reasons why we are actually rooting for a correction in the S&P and in the Qs now that shows relative strength on the transports and small cap. And let me give you an example of a couple of examples of the two-year divergence. The broad market and the transports peaked in 1966. The Dow and the S&P, and really the Dow, did what they call a solitary walk and peaked in 68, 69. That led to the 10-year lost decade. We peaked in the broad market in 98 and in technology in the Dow in 2000, and that gave us the 2000 debacle. We peaked in 1927 in the broad market in the advanced decline line, and the rest of the market, the large caps, peaked in 1929, and that led to a substantial correction. Right now, the advanced decline line is confirming new highs in the averages, and we are close to our targets of 294 to 302. So the way we evaluate that is once we go above 294 on the spider, the chance of a more severe correction goes up for us. Once we hit into our target range, there's a chance for a more severe correction. We mentioned that once in the weekly. We saw that last year when the spider got to, believe it or not, 293.96 with our target of 294 and then had a more severe correction in December. Now, non-confirmations, when you hear about the non-confirmations, it's mostly people called Dow theorists. And the idea of Dow theory is you're in a primary bull market if the transports confirm the industrials. And, of course, that's not happening. The transports are lagging the industrials by a good margin. One of the problems with Dow theory, however, is that it doesn't say when the confirmation has to occur. The other thing to remember about Dow theory is that was invented. It was one of the first technical analysis attempts to measure the market back in the late 1800s, early 1900s, when people didn't have all the types of techniques available to them to judge confirmation or non-confirmation. And indeed, one of the trick questions on the CMT exams is discuss utilities and the Dow theory, since we have the Dow utilities, the Dow transports, and the Dow industrials. And the answer to that question for anyone getting ready to take the exam is the utilities aren't included in that explanation at all. And the reason for that was when Dow theory was invented, there was no utility average. It was never invented. So that is that's so, in other words, we're looking at these non-confirmations And we're watching them, but this is not a huge concern for us yet. We want to see what happens. We want to see how the market goes. We have our areas where we think the market can pull back to. If those were to occur, we would be concerned. And most importantly, we're looking at the weekly stochastics, which are starting to give sell indications on IJR, for example. And those will probably rule. And again, realize that when some of these things like Dow Theory were promulgated, they didn't have stochastic oscillators. They didn't have computers. They really didn't know all the stuff that we know today. So the bottom line is there. Yes, we are concerned about that. And we're watching it, but it's not an, oh, my God, we have to sell everything. Just as sort of the volatility piece we published in the midweek says that, yeah, we're in danger of a more volatile market, but it doesn't necessarily mean it has to start right away. And one thing about volatility that has happened here over the last 10, 15 years is a lot of people use the VIX for volatility. We don't like the VIX as an indicator because it's based on option premiums. And option premiums tend to go up when the market becomes more volatile, and that makes the VIX go up. So for us, the VIX is not a predictive indicator like the volatility indicator we showed in the weekly. It is a coincident or a lagging indicator. And remember also, volatility can mean upside trading, and down, as well as downside trading, something that the VIX doesn't normally do well. So we're going to leave that discussion. Jeff may have some questions about it. People may have some questions about it. We'll get back to people on that. Let's talk about TLT. It's come down and basically held the 122 area support. We think TLT is a range. We note that the weekly stochastic is in sell mode. We note that the daily stochastic is a little bit more in buy mode, suggesting we should see a rally up to the top of the range. It wouldn't surprise us to see these treasuries in a 122 to 126 range for a while. Let's talk about commodities here. DBC is literally dead even. The oil market still looks as if we could see a little bit of pullback in oil. Our targets for the year for oil are 72. Last year that was hit in May while I was abroad, and then again later in the year, and we had a more severe decline. We could see that sort of thing happening here. Again, note that the oil stocks are not doing as much as they could do given the improvement in oil, and their stochastics are negative, so we're still being a little bit nervous about that. Gold is showing more of the types of bottoming signs than we thought it was showing in the weekly report in the 120 area. We think that GLD could be a range up to 126, 127. Recall our traders sold it at 126 and basically bought back in the weekly around the 120 area. We would try to run that up. And probably the most important thing I want to talk about here today of interest is the dollar, which is starting to put on a nice move. We put some points in the weekly review on the dollar in terms of where it would be a breakout. 26.60, I think, which is fairly close by on UUP. And if you look at DXY, above 98.50 would be a fairly strong move. And we note that it's at 98.12 right now. So that dollar is going well. And one of the things that we want to mention also is, you know, sort of update a little bit our concerns on DB, Deutsche Bank. One of our clients, and I thank him very much if he's on this call, has been sending me pieces on Deutsche Bank. In fact, two clients, one guy, manager out in Beverly Hills, and a broker in Louisville are sending me articles on this. Probably the most interesting article on Deutsche Bank that I saw was the article that Deutsche Bank was thinking of creating a so-called bad bank to dump all their derivatives and bad exposure in. That's particularly interesting to us because those of us who remember the financial crisis should recall that the last attempt to save Lehman Brothers before Paulson nixed the attempt, and before Lehman Brothers blew up, was a proposal to create a so-called bad Lehman. So if this Deutsche Bank thing is a parallel to Lehman Brothers, the next thing we ought to hear is Deutsche Bank simply going bankrupt and collapsing. Again, I'm not sure that's going to happen, but the fact that they're even thinking about that does highlight concerns on DB. And we should note that we're more worried about the market being derailed because of a problem with the euro and Deutsche Bank than anything in this country. Everybody keep your eyes on DB and keep your eyes on DB articles. If we start to see problems with that, that's where the rubber is going to meet the road and where we could see a correction into the summer. Again, our European contacts are suggesting that that will occur after the Eurozone elections in May, which I believe are around May 23rd to May 27th. Someone will probably correct me on that on the call. That's fine. But that's what we should be watching for, in my opinion. And with that, I'm going to pass the call over to Jeff Garbaz and see if Jeff has any questions for us. Jeff?
Hey, Fred. How are you?
I am well, Jeff. How are you?
Pretty good. Hey, so my first question is maybe the problem with Russell the dollar, because the Russell typically struggles when you have a strong dollar. And so should we just kind of not go back in and overweight Russell until we get a clearer picture that maybe the dollar is actually peaking as opposed to breaking out and just going to get incredibly strong?
I think that's fair to say. We have some people that have tried tactical trades on IJR, and what we would say to those people is I think that could still work, but adhere to your risk management disciplines. And, Jeff, the other thing is let's watch the Russell carefully. The spider seems to be keying off some of the indicators on the Russell. In other words, we've got weekly and daily stochastic sells on IJR and I think on IWM as well, really more on IJR than IWM, but IWM actually has come down a bit on the daily stochastic. But the main thing is let's watch for buy indications on and sell indications on those indicators to watch the S&P a little bit. Our long-term system is still what we call a Desmond. It is dead neutral, which means we're in a hold mode and, obviously buy stocks that are interesting. And let's see how we go here.
Okay, so I want to stay on the dollar for a second.
Sure.
So after our close yesterday, early morning in Japan, the BOJ came out and basically for the first time they said, hey, rates are going to stay super low and we're going to be another year before we even think about doing anything different. That said, go look at FXY this morning. It's ripping against the dollar. I mean, it's really strong. So the dollar is going up only because of the sterling and then the euro, but it's not. So would you be a buyer of FXY given what we now know about what the BOJ said? It looks like a perfect entry opportunity on FXY.
Yeah, there's
FXY
a great
here.
Double bottom on FXY. If you're interested in playing the currencies, you've got a great double bottom. Yesterday's trading was a spike through the double bottom, which has been immediately reversed. You buy this with a stop at 84.40, say, and I think you've got the opportunity to get a couple of points out of that. And obviously, if the yen goes and makes new lows, you're out. But I think you've got a couple of points on this yen. And again, you know, one of the currency trading is really funny, Jeff, for a lot of our stock people. I heard someone say, well, what if the dollar traders all decide to go to cash? Well, the dollar is cash. The yen is cash. How do you go to cash in a foreign currency? The way is by buying another currency. So I think that some of this yen money is money coming in because of the strength and because of the weakness and potential for problems in the euro. We'll have to see. As it stands on the face of it, the yen is a good trade to the upside here.
Okay. So I want to come back to gold for a second. So gold had a gap down on the 15th, tax day, to the 16th. So that was 2 weeks, so it would be a week ago Monday on the 15th when it did that. And then so the low on that day on the 15th was 121.10, and the close is 121.60. Today, the intraday high is 121.10, and now we're trading at 120.96. So could there be a chance that we fill the gap, and then that's it for now, and then we go back and down? And if that was going to turn out to be the case, as opposed to what you were saying earlier, to rally, what should we expect to see in the next couple of days on GLD? If it filled the gap and that's it?
You know, the main thing is it would suddenly stop going up. And the real concern for us on GLD would be a break of that big low on the 23rd at 119.55. Essentially, Jeff, if you're trading GLD, and I actually have a couple of people that are, your stop is 119.50, and you're in at 120, and I think we were in at 120.10 or something like that. You've got, again, a good trade with risk management and a daily stochastic that's positive and a weekly stochastic that's in position to recycle to the upside. So you hold, and, of course, any break of that 119.55 could take GLD all the way back down to, say, at least 118 and possibly to fill that little gap at 116. So we would be very sagacious there in terms of utilizing risk management.
You know what's funny about this is look at FXY, the weekly chart. The stochastics of both GLD on a daily and a weekly basis and FXY are almost exactly the same. I mean, if you're looking at the stochastics, they look almost identical.
Yeah, that's a good point. And it could be, again, the yen functions as a flight to quality currency if the euro really gets in trouble, and so does GLD. That would make some sense.
Well, next week, Theresa May is going to try and bring another vote. I mean, it's just incredible that she would even think about that, considering that they said, we'll go to October. And this vote would be to just say, we're not ever leaving Brexit. So that is going to happen next week, even though they already said that. So that maybe is what's going on here. And the other thing that I heard this morning, which is kind of interesting on the dollar, is the idea that, the U.S. delegation is going back to China on the 30th, and if there is a trade deal with China, then Trump is going to go right away and start picking on the Europeans, which would weaken the euro and make the dollar stronger. And he's already done that with he came out this week when Harley-Davidson announced earnings, and basically they said, we're getting crushed by the tariffs from Europe, and Trump got on it very quickly, like the same day. So maybe that's what's going on with the dollar.
You know, that could be, but again, you know, everyone should remember the euro is actually, if you look at the weekly chart, it's making new two-year and possibly longer lows here. I'm looking at a weekly, and it's the lowest it's been on the weekly chart. It's not as low as it's been on the monthly. Our plan has been steadfastly, we're looking at the consolidation back in January of 2017. We note that there's highs at 104.90 or so, 105, let's say, for round numbers. And we're planning, at least so far still, on possibly going to Europe. I'm going to buy some euro-denominated traveler's checks at 105 on the euro for sure. That's one of the areas we've been waiting for, and then 100. And, Jeff, I don't want to count out Deutsche Bank. If Deutsche Bank has trouble and it still looks pretty icky, we have to be really careful here.
Yeah, hey, Fred, just related to Deutsche Bank, this morning Commerce Bank basically said there is no deal. So there is no deal now. So they're just kind of left holding their own. Okay, so last thing I want to hit on is a couple industrials are really struggling this morning. Look at MMM and also VC. It seems like we're moving much more into a stock picker's market. And then also look at, so MMM, VC, FCX is down like 9%. CLB is down a bunch. So it seems like we're evolving more into a stock picker's market. And does that happen as you get into these periods, like you talk about the transports from the 98 through 2000 period, does that also a byproduct of that phenomenon that it ends up being a much better market for stock pickers?
That is part of it, and of course, one of the ways that manifests is that the market continues to thin out and certain stocks continue to do better. And, you know, Jeff, one of the things, and it's a good point that you make, when the market is narrowing up, obviously it becomes a stock picker's market because you're trying to buy the stocks that are going up and there's less of them. So in that sense, yeah, I think you're right, and we have to be a little careful of that.
So along with that, I saw an article talking about how FANG is doing pretty well. Most of the FANG-type stocks have recovered now from their September highs and are kind of starting to move more. Would you be back into those type of names for the most part?
I would actually, yes. If you're an aggressive trader, I would be in those names. But again, you know, Jeff, that's one of the signs of doom. So, okay, you know, I would be more watching that and sticking with my models. And if the market continues to narrow, you know, one thing that would be real interesting is if we have a pullback here and then another good run in the market and the advanced decline line doesn't make new highs, that's where it would get interesting.
Yeah, so along that line, this is my last thing, and I'll let you we'll go to questions. So SPY 2 days ago on Tuesday made a new all-time closing high, and same thing on the S&P 500. But the only other index that's really done it is the NASDAQ 100 and the NASDAQ Composite. Mid-cap isn't doing it. S&P 100 isn't doing it. S&P 600 isn't doing it. The Dow isn't doing it. So let's say we're a month and a half from now, we get into June, and those other indexes have not made new highs. Would that become more problematic to you that the only two indexes that have done it are basically the S&P and the NASDAQ?
Yeah, but that again comes back to what we're saying. This state of affairs can go on for a couple of years. That phenomenon has been present at every greater than 25% decline the stock market has ever had.
But I'm talking specifically, I get the underperformance concept, but I'm in particular talking about not going back to the September high. I can't see that phenomenon going on for another 2 years where the S&P goes up, you know, 20% this year, 20%, 15% next year, and the Russell doesn't at least get back to like a new high, because that's such a small amount percentage-wise. I mean, you're talking about a move from, let's just call it 156 where it's right now to 172. 16 points is like a 10% move.
If we had a good correction here and they lagged, we could easily do that. That's what happened in 98-99.
Okay. Very easy. Okay, but the longer it takes for the other indexes to at least get back to the September high, the more problematic it's going to become for you, correct?
Yes, the more difficult it becomes. And then we wait to see if one of our long-term trend systems, and what we're really waiting for is to see whether one of our long-term trend systems goes either positive or negative. And as you point out, the two that are positive in our long-term trend system are the NASDAQ Composite and the S&P, and those are the ones that have made new closing highs. So, so far, everything's working the way it should. Let's get to some questions, Jeff. It's 20 of. Questions from the field?
Brad, Alan.
Hey, Brad, Scott.
Let me do Alan first, Scott. I don't want to get off Scott free, Alan, but we'll do you first.
It's very good.
That was terrible.
On the dollar.
Yes, sir.
I think there may be a bit more pressure to move the dollar up, and Jeff may want to weigh in on this too. It's not just going to be Europe. You've got China with close to $1.5 trillion of dollar-denominated debt that's coming due this year, certainly by the end of the year. There was a piece that's been done where China's banks are running out of dollars. This was in the journal. So there could well be a lot more upward pressure on the dollar. The thing that would then concern me is that being the case, so IJR, well, it's going to continue to get even weaker, would it not?
You know, if the U.S. economy, domestic economy, is stronger, small cap actually should do okay even under those circumstances because they're not multinational, they're domestic.
Okay.
So there's a fine line there. And Alan, just be a little careful every time we see that somebody's running out of dollars. There are plenty of dollars around. Our problem here is not that there's not enough dollars in the world. Right? The problem may be we have too many of the damn things. But that's an interesting point. You know, we all try to look for what problem is going to be the one that derails us. And it could be something, you know, again, if there's a Chinese trade deal, some of those issues are going to start to go away. But interesting. Other questions, Alan? And thank you for the stuff that you've sent me. That's been very helpful.
No sweat. Glad to do it. Okay. Thanks for your help.
Scott, have at it.
Thanks. This might be, you know, just picking bones, I guess, but you talked about your long-term indicators, and that two of the majors are in a buy mode. Do I put words in your mouth, or would you agree that you do feel that we're in a secular bull market?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't, you know, the whole secular to me is longer than 5-6 years. You know, it's not a 1 or 2 year deal. And my long-term trend system is more designed for, you know, on a year to 2 year basis. But
okay, so from a
I don't have anything saying there's a we're in a secular bear market or anything but a secular bull.
Okay, appreciate that. And, you know, obviously at some point we're going to get a cyclical bear turn or whatever we want to call it, correction. I mean, it's obviously statistically probable. Where do you weigh in on that? What kind of indicators, and is it all stochastics for you, or what will you call the next? And the reason I go there, you know, we all saw Larry Fink talk the melt up talk. Hartnett's been certainly espousing that, and I found your volatility midweek piece extremely interesting, which could line up with all of that. You're not calling for a melt-up per se, but your vol index says that within a month or two, you know, volatility could dramatically move up, and that's where we should be more defensive. So long-windedly, how does that all square up with your work?
Yeah, let me talk about that for just a minute, Scott, especially the volatility index, because I'm going to ask a couple of very basic questions, Scott, and I'll answer them, but you can answer them too. The real definition of volatility for me is the distance between the high and low of a bar, right?
Right.
I mean, that's a really basic, stupid-ass definition, but I think it's a good one, right?
Sure.
Okay. Well, the problem with the VIX is it tends to not be able to measure volatility to the upside, right? When we have a big up move, the VIX falls. And that's because the VIX is not a volatility indicator to me. It's a sentiment indicator. It means that the put premiums are staying low. See what I'm saying?
The fear gauge. Yep.
Yeah, it's a fear gauge. And a fear gauge measures emotion. It doesn't measure volatility. My indicator, and again, this is an approximation of the indicator. A hedge fund buddy, Sed Moses, and I came up with this idea for this indicator, and basically we vowed to ourselves never to publish it. and I'm not publishing the exact indicator, but it's a useful approximation. And one of the things that is in that approximation is the distance between the high and low on the daily spider. If we have a melt-up, Scott, and we have range expansion to the upside, that volatility indicator that I use will go up. It will not go down or stay where it is.
Okay.
So that indicator says nothing about direction. It just says that when we're where we are, volatility could expand. It could be either up or down. Does that make sense?
Okay. So, I don't have it in front of me, but it did correspond to, I should say the coming off the lows on your indicator to a higher vol situation. Did it not correspond with the market rolling over or no?
Yes, but if you look at that indicator in the 80s and 90s, it corresponds to all the big advances too.
Okay. That's helpful. Thanks.
Right. And one of the reasons for that may be the rise of indexing and passive investments. I mean, I haven't gone in and correlated that, but what I'm saying is we could have a melt up and the thing just explodes to the upside. Okay. But let's ask a question here, Scott, that's very interesting. How many times have we heard people talk about melt ups in the last couple of years?
Fairly often.
Four or five, right? How many times have we had a severe correction almost immediately afterwards? We haven't had a melt up. But we have had the corrections. So I take that as a very bearish sign that these yo-yos are talking about that again.
Fair enough. And would you personally opine that a China trade bill is already baked into numbers, estimates, sentiment, et cetera?
I think that's the big risk, is that the market sells off on that Chinese trade deal.
Okay.
And again, guys, let's ask a question on the call. And this is, again, for the purpose of the call and the purpose of my work and the purpose of just walking around in America, I try to be apolitical when analyzing these things. But the real question here is, will the market rally or decline into the election, right? If you think the market is going to rally into the election, we have to reload the weekly and monthly indicators before that happens, which implies a correction before that rally. Okay? If you think the market's going to decline into the election, we can rally through summer and then do what we did in 2015, 2016. I'm taking a lot of time. We have time for questions, but what happened in the summer of 2015 is the first of the four indexes in my long-term trend system went negative. That was small cap. By August, transports were negative. Then the NASDAQ composite went negative. And by December, the spider was negative. All four were negative. And then by the election, all four had gone positive again after the 2016 January-February drop. We're seeing, interestingly enough, the same indexes positive and negative that we saw in 2015 right now, with a negative small cap and a negative transportations. We've gotten there differently, but the situation is the same. So that's, to me, is one of the things that I'm watching very carefully.
Very
that's
helpful.
Why I
Thanks,
want to
Brian.
See one of the components on the Desmond either go positive or negative on either side of the 2-2. That will tell us a lot.
Perfect. Thanks.
Very good. Other questions? I hope
Fred.
I didn't go on too long about that. Other questions?
Fred?
Yes, sir.
Yogesh here.
Hey, Yogesh.
Fred.
How are you?
So the between you, Jeff, and the other two gentlemen, you guys had a great discussion. If I may ask one more question in that regards. So see, the U.S. market is a very big market, right? And you are one of the very, very few who thinks the dollar may dollar may continue going up, and if the dollar goes up, then we may have a problem with the emerging market and other area, including the euro and all of those things. If the dollar gets stronger, then isn't it the thing that you are mentioning about some kind of a cyclical correction that will bring all of those things together, and not only emerging market, but even the U.S. market may have a correction coming. Is it anything likely that could happen in the next few months that you see?
And
so
it
can be
And you and I can talk about this more offline, but one of the questions I really have here is, let's say Deutsche Bank really gets in trouble and the European markets have a correction because of that, and the dollar goes straight up because of that. Okay? I think it's safe to say that even if Deutsche Bank gets in trouble, they're going to do something to prevent a collapse of the European financial system. In other words, 6 months from now, that situation will be fixed. We don't know how or what's going to happen in the interim, but if something really goes wrong there, it's going to get fixed. They're not going to just say, well, we'll have a worldwide depression because Europe's in the tank. So my question to myself is, ordinarily, if the dollar is strong for fundamental reasons relating to the dollar, that really hurts emerging markets and the foreign markets. If the dollar is strong just because of a fiasco with Deutsche Bank and derivatives, everyone in the market will probably realize that's temporary. That may not hit emerging markets that much. I just don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Because the reason is one that everyone could see through to the end on. Right.
The Fred, may I ask you one more question?
Sure.
Because somebody has done some homework on the Deutsche Bank. My impression is that USA has, for many years, has separated the bank from the government, whereas in Europe, each country has one large bank that is tied up with the government. And if that is the case, can German government or any other government can let their prime bank go under, or they will interfere and they will do everything to protect them? Just a question.
I think the Deutsche Bank is the pride of Germany. Yeah.
Yes.
I think they will protect them, but, you know, Yogesh, let's think about this for just a minute. Deutsche Bank allegedly has, and Jeff can chime in on this or anyone that wants to, I've seen figures as high as 45% of the derivatives in Europe. They've issued them. They have responsibility for them in some way. In order to really fix Deutsche Bank, something's going to have to happen to that big derivative position, just as it had to happen with derivatives and subprime mortgages here in this country. Now, obviously, they did fix that. The Fed came in, took a lot of those things, a lot of them matured. That got fixed, but you can't just say, well, we're going to cancel all those, and if you're on the other side of the trade, tough apples, right? They're going to have to do something, and that something, to me, will probably take at least a month, probably more, probably 2, 3, 4 months, right, while they're fixing it, just as we had. You know, if you really look at the financial crisis, you know, the bad times were 4 months, January to March in 2009. That's when everyone really said we're in danger of going under. This probably wouldn't take as long, but it would take some time. And at the end, I think you're right. Deutsche Bank would emerge healthier. In other words, if we get real news that that's happening, buy a little bit of Deutsche Bank and hope as part of their repair plan they don't cancel all the stock and declare bankruptcy, right? But, yeah, I'm sure they're going to fix it. The question is how and how long it's going to take. And I do see, as Jeff mentioned today, people are running away from this as if it were a hot potato that's on the floor that they don't want to pick up.
Hey, Fred, just real quickly on Deutsche Bank. So
Sure.
the real numbers are this. Basically, the problem actually isn't in Germany. The problem is London, which is where the derivatives are. On any given day, they have like 40 trillion. It's 40 trillion out there in the market, but they're on they're at risk of 100 billion. So that gives you an idea of what it is kind of day to day. So assume you got into the worst case scenario, that 100 billion could probably move up several multiples of that. But that's typically what that is. And there's a bunch of articles that have been written about this. Maybe Fred on the weekly, we can include one or two of them, and
If
I'll
you
go
want
back
to
and look
pick
at
some,
them and
Jeff, and
kind
we'll
of
put
figure out.
that in chart of interest, that would be great.
But that's what the number is.
Yeah. So it's a big number, but it's not insurmountable. You know, as what's his name, Will Rogers said,
Fred,
and
last question.
go ahead,
The
get there.
last question. The regarding the yen. If yen gets stronger, isn't it the problem for the Japanese market? Right now, Japanese market is doing well, but if the yen starts getting stronger, would that be a real trouble for them?
Yeah, that could certainly create some problems for them. One of the reasons that we elected to use Singapore instead of Japan was concern about the dollar and the yen. Because
Thank you,
Singapore
Fred.
won't get
Thank you.
hit with that. Yeah, Yogesh, those are all good observations. Thank you. Other questions? Very well. Going once. Going twice.
Hey, Fred, would
Hey,
you
Fred,
take one
Fred
and
Allen,
pass?
yeah.
Hang on, Alan. I think that was Scott. Scott?
I'm sorry. One stock, Cat, please.
Yeah, I'm surprised that that's been as weak as it has been over the last few days. There is a gap at roughly 132.50, 133 that it could fill. And I would expect it to stop there. I note that if it does that, you'll probably have a daily stochastic that is down and oversold, then we just have to wait for it to recycle up. But that would be my guess.
Thank you.
Alan.
Question for you or Jeff or actually anybody else that's on this call. My understanding and my concern about Deutsche Bank is counterparty risk. And my understanding is that U.S. financials are on the bulk on the other side of that trade. Anybody weigh in on that?
My understanding is it's mostly the European banks that are in there, but I don't know. And surely U.S. banks would get hit a little bit if that were to occur.
But
Hey Alan,
Fred,
it's
if I can.
Jeff Garbaz. Hey, so the best article I found, I guess I'm gonna come out earlier on this. It's in Seeking Alpha. It was written last November.
Yes.
It's called Deutsche Bank: The Derivative Myth Evolved. So if you just want to email me, just G Garbaz, so GGARBACZ at quantpartners.com. I'll forward you that link. And anyone else who wants that right now, they can send it to me. And I'll send that to them. So it goes through all the numbers, so you can
And
kind of
let's
look at
put that,
everything.
Jeff, do put that in the chart of interest section,
Yeah.
in the weekly for, because among other things, I want to see it.
Yep. It does a nice review of that, and I'll search for a couple others. But the one that I really like is this one, because I think it's more conservative than like the bearish position that's being taken on Deutsche Bank. So I'm kind of like the bearish position is an extremist position, so that's why I kind of like this article. Does that make sense?
Yeah, makes sense to me. And certainly this, if there is a problem with Deutsche Bank in this, it's not going to be a surprise. It has been widely advertised. The only thing I would mention, though, is, the housing bubble was also widely advertised. Rich Bernstein, David Rosenberg, and other analysts were talking about this in 2005, 2006. The market didn't peak until 2007. And one of the things that was interesting about it was that it was much worse than anyone had thought it was going to be, except for really Rich and Rosie. So, you know, the fact that it's widely advertised doesn't mean that it can't happen. I do think, as Yogesh put it, you know, Deutsche Bank isn't going to go away. It's the National Bank of Germany, for heaven's sakes, right? It's not like Lehman Brothers going away when Lehman Brothers was not the national bank of anything. But getting from here to there may cause some turbulence. I just want to – what I'm doing myself in my own trading and investing is I am watching the markets and I'm watching those things. And if the market suddenly starts reacting badly and those things are getting worse, I'm going to become a little more defensive and see if that storm will pass, especially if it's right around the end of May. Other questions?
Thanks, Fred.
Sure, Alan. Very well. Going once?
Fred, good morning.
Fred,
Paul.
Real quick.
Sure,
UNH?
Sure. Yeah, UNH. You know, the only problem, and I didn't mention this with these health cares, is we're seeing reactions to the news on these now. So objectively, the stochastics say that this is a buy, and I would buy it for a trade. But just be aware, we may see up and down news-related volatility on these, you know, until the election. Okay. That's one reason why we basically came down to an equal weight on these from an overweight, because I think these may not trade strictly technically for the next 12 months. They may start to trade, you know, a little bit more newsy.
Understood.
But objectively, if you're a trader, UNH is a buy here with an objective of 240, and then you watch it very carefully and possibly kick it out.
Very good. Thank you much.
Sure. Well, there was one other fella. Question.
Fred, that was Paul here.
Paul here. How are you doing here?
I'm well, sir. Thank
good,
you.
Paul. Yeah.
You had 292 to 302 as your upside target for the year. You've hedged a little bit on that, potentially saying we could go to 320 on a craziness. Looking to the downside now, where would you say your, you know,
downside target is still 240 to 220. I stick with that officially. By the way, Paul, two things. First of all, you know, I designed those targets so they could be hit. In other words, I don't want to have a target that you don't hit, okay? Generally, when you hit those targets, the market becomes vulnerable to a bigger correction. But there have been, and Jeff, chime in on this if you can think to. I would say that probably three-quarters to two-thirds of the time, the high target we have has been the high for the year if it's been hit late in the year. But there have been enough times where the market simply keeps going that what you want to do is follow the trends and not just say it has to stop going up here. Okay? And I haven't redone the research on the downside, but my friend Larry Katz, and we mentioned this last week, Paul, if we don't go back and make a lower closing low, this will be probably the first time since 1932 that the momentum low and the price low have been the same. Now, Larry didn't have a time frame on that. It could take years to do. But, you know, for me, Paul, the risk is much below the 270 area would imply to me that we have a real chance of going and making a new closing low. 270 should hold this thing. And is anyone on the call quick with a calculator here? Because we can do this sort of, we're going to do grits and, you know, sort of fingers and toes here. Let's say 294 minus 234 is 60, right? Half of 60 is 30. That would put us at 264, and 264 to 270 is support. And that would be a 50% retracement of the move, and that would be normal in an uptrend. So that's why I'm saying, Paul, that we should hold the 260 to 270 area. And again, when we start to see, if we start to see a correction start, you then we'll have a better idea what the high is to take that 50% retracement from. And again, it doesn't have to be an exact 50% retracement. If you look at Apple, for example, we noted that a 50% retracement of the up move on Apple would have put the stock at about 158 to 160. Now, the stock went lower than that, but frankly, 158 to 160 was a pretty good place to buy Apple if you're an investor, right? So you don't want to...
Just real quickly.
Sure.
The retracement numbers from the day after Christmas Eve, so the 26th, through Tuesday's closing high is, the numbers are pretty close to what you said, but I just want to give it exact. The 38.2 is 270.30, so there's your 270 number. The 50% is 263.32, and the 61.8 would be 256.34. So you're totally in sync with your numbers.
Yeah, just because we're in sync doesn't mean we're going down the drain. Sorry, I had to say that. I had to say that, Jeff. But, and again, the whole thing, I don't necessarily believe completely in retracements. And the thing to watch if you're looking at them is don't be too exact on the numbers, right? Just use those as points, and if you see the market starting to turn in that general area, you know, it's probably going to be a decent opportunity. Other questions? Paul, did I answer your question?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Other questions? Going once? Going twice?
Hey, one more. Sorry. Sure. Would you look at Nokia, please?
Yeah, and Jeff Darboz did a really good job on that. By saying do Ericsson, I think. Nokia is on support in this 526 to 5 area. If you want to nibble at this now, it's okay. When you see this sort of decline, it probably means some sideways action and you're not in a hurry to buy it. But it looks like, you know, this is an area where, you know, if you're interested in buying Nokia, you should. But Jeff's point that Ericsson was probably a better way to play this looks to have been valid, and I thank him for that.
Yep, thanks.
Got it. Other questions? Going once? And if you have them, ask them. I've got till another 10 minutes. Going once? Going twice?
Fred, CHL?
CHL. Fair amount of support in this area down to, say, 45.5, 46. So if you want this again, you've got an oversold weekly stochastic. The daily has to be down as well. You know, I would wait because the daily is in the cellar. The first pop-up on this on the daily is a risky buy, and the real way to do it if you're an investor is to wait for the weekly to turn up. You could try to buy it in thirds, a little bit if it gets to 45.5, 46, let's say 46, and a little bit when the daily stochastic turns up and the final slug when the weekly stochastic turns up. And this has filled a big gap from back in January of 2019. Sure.
Hey.
Yes. Questions? Going once, going twice. Very well. This will end the Fred Report technical market call for April 25th, 2019. Everybody enjoy the great weather, and we'll talk next week.